How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Try to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Hate to start the show out with deception, but that's apparently what it is. I am not in the studios of Living Bread Radio in Canton, Ohio. I am in the studios, KVSS, Omaha, Nebraska, Spirit Radio 102.7. What a beautiful, beautiful facility, recording studio. There's a whole bunch of buttons in front of me, and one of them I've just been told that if I want to speak to Andrew over there in Ave, I have to push talk back. I can't do that. I can't. When I was a kid, I was not allowed to backtalk. And so there's just something real unsettling about me just pushing something to backtalk. Oh, never mind, but it's good to have you. Here's how the program works. Same number, nothing's changed. Now, it's going to take you a little longer to get here. I mean, traveling at the speed of light, basically. Okay, it'll take you a couple more nanoseconds to get here. But the number is 877-573-7825. 877-57-equal is the number. Why am I in Omaha, Nebraska? Because tonight, good Lord permitting, in another couple of hours, we have a 5 and a 7 o'clock taping of Living Right with Dr. Ray. Now, that's kind of an uppity title. I changed it, or I wanted to change it. I talked to the people at DWTN, Global Catholic Television, Living Okay with Dr. Ray. I think that's fine. That's good enough. It's kind of like when I was a kid. You know, they've got this cleaning solution called Fantastic. We didn't have anything like that when I was a kid. We had a similar product. It was called Pretty Good. And you sprayed it and swiped it and you streaked it. And it looked like you made an effort. And that's really what mattered when I was a boy. It's the way it was. But we are taping. Now, those of you in the KVSS network area, which is pretty much all of Nebraska, 93% coverage of Nebraska. That's incredible. If you want to come tonight, we're supposedly filled up. However, people cut out at the last minute. They do. They just decide, well, he's not all that good. Or, no, I want to wash my hair. I got to dust my coffee table. Busy stuff. So we can even put more seats up. We've got a little more room back by the cameras if you want to come at the St. John Paul II Newman Center on the Nebraska University of Nebraska Omaha campus. We will be there 5 and 7 tonight and 5 and 7 tomorrow. So, to get on the air here, 877-573-7825, 877-57-equal. Questions regarding stuff of life, people, circumstances, conundrums, struggles, emotional questions, spiritual faith questions as they interact with the stuff of psychology. People take what are clinical terms and they co-opt them. They bring them into everyday language. People use them very much. You know the terms. Comfort zone, toxic personality. There's one that I would have to say is probably the most common one I hear. It is, clinically speaking, a significant personality disorder. However, people fling the term around like it's candy. They use it to describe their spouses. They use it to describe their adult children, friends, employers. They use it. It's a lot. I would have to say, of all the terms that I hear that are psychologically personality related, this could be number one. As soon as I say it, you're going to know it. Narcissist. He's a narcissist. Now, you don't hear people say narcissistic personality disorder, which is clinically the proper term. No, we take that adjective and we use it on people. What I've noticed as a shrink is that the majority of people who are called narcissists are not. Oh, they may be self-centered. They may not have much empathy for anybody else. They may think that somewhat the world revolves around them and their needs and their wants and whatever it is they decide they have to have. Narcissism, that's pretty serious. It's serious enough to almost be labeled pathology. You got to be careful when you're flinging a word like that around. You really do. Well, Dr. Ray, what does it matter? If it summarizes what they're like, then that just is an easy way to describe them. Yeah, the problem is, you call your spouse that? What does that say?
I'm married to a person that is significantly disturbed in their personality. How will they ever change? I have to deal with them.
Once you use a word that is tinged like that, you have effectively decided that in some respects this person is irretrievable. They're not going to change. Tell that to the Holy Spirit. Tell that to God as you pray for this person to have a little more insight, a little more softness, a little more openness to other people. Say, well, you know, God, I know you created the universe and everything in it, but, you know, you don't understand my spouse. My spouse is a narcissist, so you probably can't do a whole lot about that. I hate the term. I really do. Well, part of it is because I've been accused of it by, like, 2,422 people at last count. However, I got one of those signs, you know, in my office. 27 days without being called a narcissist. I don't like the term. It's an ugly term. I think people who proclaim to be Christian should be very careful about using that term. Even if you say somebody's self-centered, you got to be careful. Here's why. Fallen human nature, which we all acknowledge we have, is self-centered. Focus on the self. Bent inward. Why wouldn't it be? So, there's a part of us that says that is the human condition. But I've noticed something. Maybe you've noticed it too. The word narcissist is rarely, if ever, used to describe oneself. When is the last time you heard somebody say, yeah, I'm a narcissist. Yep. I've been struggling with it, but it's just something that plagues my personality. I'm a narcissist. Jim Carroll, big guy here at KVSS, just came in taking pictures. This is my bad side. It's my front. This is not good. See what you can do on a Photoshop there, Jimmy. I would say probably the ratio of someone calling another person a narcissist, as opposed to calling themselves a narcissist, got to be 100-1. I haven't done any official polling. That's my sense. Yeah, I'm not a narcissist, but there are probably times when I'm a little too concerned about myself. There are probably times when I don't really consider other people's thoughts and feelings and what matters to them. I'll acknowledge that. My spouse? Now that's a real narcissist there. That's one of the things I think psychology has done to the general public. It's given us a lot of words that we can fling around and put on other people and make it sound like they're a lot more messed up than they really are. Dr. Ray, you don't know what it's like to live with a person like that. Well, of course I do. I live with me. I live with a person like that all the time. Be careful about using that word. It's terribly overused. It's a very insulting word. And it's a word that kind of implies no change is going to take place because this person's got deep-seated personality problems. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call here on The Doctor Is In.
When I heard other business owners say they finally found someone in the credit card industry they can trust, I wondered how he could help me. So when Mark from Schisler CPC offered to show me where all the money goes for credit card processing with a free analysis of my business, I jumped on it. He reviewed how the industry works, where we could save, and offered a no-contract guarantee on savings and excellent customer service. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Schisler CPC. Trust in them.
More information available on the Ave Maria website under Sponsor Business Directory.
Do you ever find yourself confessing the same sin over and over again? Mine is directly related to what I do for a living, communicate, and sometimes my mouth can get me in trouble. It's amazing what situations God may put us in, or how the very gifts we're blessed with can sometimes be a major bump in the road. As a trained strengths coach, I know that our strengths can hinder us if we're not careful with how we use them. As I become stronger in my faith, my communication vocation and ministry has much more value to me. The church holds in high regard those who preach and teach the good news, especially parents. And in some way, we're all evangelizing. I use a radio platform and my speaking voice to do so. Yet that same voice sometimes causes me to sin. With confession, focusing on Christ, and discernment, that sin is committed less often. So let's focus our strengths on glorifying God. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
Ever thought you'd make a bungle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Thinking it very close to the speed of light. Actually, that's not true. They've done studies on how fast neuronal impulses occur, either in the brain or peripherally down towards the muscles. It's pretty fast. I mean, if you had a state trooper, he'd pull over your nervous impulses. That's pretty fast. You got to get there quick. In other words, if I think of moving my hand right now, instantaneously I can move my hand. So what would happen if you had to wait? Think about that. If your impulses traveled, let's say, a foot a second from your brain out to your finger is what? 3 feet? 4 feet, maybe? It'd be 4 seconds before you could actually move your fingers. That's the kind of stuff I think about that keeps me awake at night. Not real good. All right, let's get to your calls. Mary from Ohio says, okay, Dr. Raymond, you just spent 8 minutes talking about overusing the term narcissist. I want to know, because I think I got one in my family, my social circle, hanging around me. Now, Mary would not think she's a narcissist. I know that. Nobody ever thinks they're a narcissist. Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm good, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm fine, dear. Thanks for the call.
Good. And I have to tell you, you're a little bit wrong there, because I have wondered that about myself from time to time.
Oh, that's awful humble of you. That's awful humble.
Well, I would like to know exactly. You said to be very careful using that word, and I understand that point, but I would like to know really what are the signs of a true narcissist?
Well, first of all, Mary, it's like the old... Did I commit a serious sin because I don't want to commit a serious sin? Now, many priests will tell you, well, the fact that you're even worried about committing a serious sin tells you you probably didn't commit a serious sin. So mm-hmm. If you're saying, I worry sometimes that I'm a narcissist, that thought in and of itself is probably some indication that even if you are self-centered, you're not extreme enough to be considered clinically a narcissist. Now one might say, well, Dr. Ray, what's extreme, right? How do you know? How bad does it have to be? Yeah, how bad does it have to be? It's the kind of thing, Mary, that you are so absorbed in yourself that it dramatically affects your relationships, your ability to understand or empathize with someone else and their feelings and their viewpoints and consideration of them. You are so caught up in what serves you, what you want, what you need, what you have to have, and that if you don't, you're hostile. Now, I got a feeling that ain't you.
I hope not. No. Try not to be.
But here's the problem. We Christians recognize that there is a self-centered streak in all of us. How could there not be? First of all, it's wired into us. We survive. We have to survive. So St. Thomas Aquinas says, you want to figure out a motivation of someone, follow the self. In other words, how does this serve me? That's the first thing. For example, I'm going to go do that TV show tonight, right?
Right.
Now, my goal on that TV show is pretty straightforward. I want to offer something of usefulness, of decency, so that more people go to EWTN Global Catholic Television. That's what I want. But you know what's always there? Always lurking in my mind? Go ahead. You tell me, Mary. Go ahead. What is it?
What's in it for me?
Yes!
Or what's in it for you?
Yes! How do I look? How does this make me feel? Maybe somebody will admire me. Exactly. You got to keep beating that over the head because it's always there.
So does that really then go hand in hand with the sin of pride?
Oh, yeah, of course. And if pride is the central sin, then there's going to be a certain amount of, if you want to use the word narcissism, in all of us. Now, fortunately, the last several years, I have dominated the Humility Award, which means I've pretty much crushed competition.
For good reason.
Yeah, well, it's obvious to me anyway. So, given that, when one, C.S. Lewis put it this way. Here's what he said. He said, when one is aware that one is proud, that is a very big first step in beating down pride.
Ah, okay.
If you recognize, if you say, you know, what was my motive in that? I know what my motive was. My motive was to seek me. My motive was to put forth my interests. That's the first sin I say in confession. You know that? I say, bless me, Father, I want to confess the sins of the self. And there's a whole bunch of those.
Okay.
There's self-promotion, self-aggrandizement, self-seeking, self-status. It's always there. And you know what it is? It's subtle stuff, Mary. You don't notice it unless you pay attention to it. If you don't look at how you're putting yourself ahead of all other stuff, you miss it. Just miss it. That's what makes difficult people difficult to deal with. They don't see it.
I see. Yeah. I do see it.
Yeah.
Okay. That helps.
Well, I'm glad. And you may slip into being a narcissist every so often, but just pull yourself back. That's all.
Okay.
All right, sweetheart. Thanks for the call.
And you keep working on that Humility Award.
Oh, I'm very close to having it exactly where I want it. Exactly.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you, dear. Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to... Oh, boy, we got all kinds of narcissist questions up there. But I do want to get to Melissa. And the reason I want to get to Melissa is because this is showing my geographical acumen. Because the way it's spelled is Worcester. But I say Worcester, which is cool. Right, Melissa?
You're right. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, this 17-year-old that is, as you use, now here's another one of these terms, Melissa, addicted.
Yeah,
I'm going to do a monologue. After I listened to your monologue, I'm like, oh, I caught that.
Yes, I'm going to do a monologue on that one, too, because that one's really, I think, overused. Now, he may be preoccupied. He may be stuck with it. He may be putting it ahead of everything else that is of importance. What makes you think he's way over involved in this?
Okay, so for about in March, we caught him doing it. So basically, STEM with schooling, because they didn't have electronics like in the classroom, but now this year they had to, in case they had to go remote automatically. So he'd get bored and he'd start gambling like during class. And so then, and let's see, in March we caught it because like hundreds of dollars were getting
wow.
on. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is, like, it started little, and it got to hundreds. I'm like, we're going to stop it right here. And he's like, no, it, yep, okay. And
I can stop, Mom. I can stop. You don't have to do anything about it,
yeah.
Mom. I'll stop.
Oh, yeah. This isn't a problem. I got this. I got that. I got it under control. I'm like, oh, here we go. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I'll let you try. And so then I just checked, like, his bank accounts and stuff today, and there it is. He stopped for like a couple months, but it's back. And so just did a bet for $300 and lost it. And I'm like, okay, so this is not something you can handle. And there's addiction that runs in my side of the family. So I, not necessarily gambling, but others. So I'm just wondering, okay, how do we nip it in the bud so that it doesn't become an addiction?
How's he getting access to the computer? Is it completely through Scholastic things?
No, it's just internet. You can basically, he can access it from the phone, like any internet source. You can access
okay, here's a question.
Yeah.
Why are you letting him have access?
Well, now we'll have to stop. But the other thing is, and even if he overrides that, he can have other people place bets for him.
And you say that
stopped,
this
yeah.
money he's lost yep. comes from his bank account.
Right. So, yeah, so I just kind of froze that sort of stuff.
Good
but
move.
But basically what's interesting with it is you can set, like when we looked into last time, you can set up an account and they give you credits to start. So you can kind of play with fake money and then to get you going. And then
does he have a car?
So, yes.
Why?
To get back and forth to school.
Uh-huh. You hear what I'm saying, don't you? You hear what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, we can definitely. He's admitted to it. He's admitted, like, okay, yep, I'll stop. But I just see, like, he needs a mental reset. Like, I don't know, like, he needs to see why this is a problem and how to avoid it because he wants to go away
okay.
to school all
right. All right. Wait
next fall.
Now you're talking
like,
about,
oh.
No, first of all, he has to understand and have a rationale as to why this isn't good.
That's right.
And that
yes.
is that. That is nice, but I think that is less likely in the short term than you making it impossible for him to feed the habit.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that for sure because I can totally. Any money he gets from work.
And
or whatever,
the other thing you might say is if this isn't under control, you're not going away to school.
Right.
And
oh, well, yeah,
if
we
you go away to school
that.
And we find out this happens, we're bringing you back home.
Right. No, I totally agree. I just didn't know if instead of just if there's more that we can do than
well,
just take away the access.
Okay.
That we can see.
you're once again, you're looking at, I got to get him to understand. Got to get mm-hmm. him to realize the harmfulness in this. We've got to get through to his thinking
okay.
so that he voluntarily gives this up. That is a path to take. However, what you're battling right now is the incredible excitement that he's getting from this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. That's the quote-unquote addictive factor, all right? There's parts of the brain that just go off, and in gambling, it's
mm-hmm.
like this is a rush.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to do is you want to break the link between that rush.
¶¶
broadcasting from the studios of KBSS 102.7, Omaha, Nebraska, Spirit Radio, Spirit Catholic Radio. Great network, blankets pretty much all of Nebraska, 93%, close to it. Which means in Nebraska, I have, and we've done some recent polls, I have close to nine listeners. And that's given at any one time. The accum, which is the total number of listeners, is up around 24. So that's really great. I'm excited about that. 877-573-7825, 877-57, equal Why Am I In Omaha? Because, good Lord permitting, in a couple of hours, we're going to go over to the St. John Paul II Newman Center on the University of Nebraska campus at Omaha and tape a couple of Living Right with Dr. Ray's. So the good thing is, after this last year of all kinds of societal, emotional, physical, everything, religious upheaval, I could think of more adjectives, but I'll let it go at that. Life is returning to normal, at least in some places. So we'll be able to do a great live audience, and the audience definitely makes a show. All right, where am I going here? Elizabeth. Oh, all right. Let's see, we're at here. Well, Elizabeth's question was, I want to take it because she left. Let me give you the number here, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. Keep in mind, and I've said this repeatedly, you call any time during the program. People have the idea that, if I don't call at the top of the program, I'll never get on. That's not true. You can call any time during the program. You have a relatively equal chance of getting on for various reasons. Because calls are not screened according to chronology. Temporary. Elizabeth asks, are you a narcissist? Now, I'm assuming that's personal. She means me. My answer, I certainly would hope not. Now, do I have intruding self? Yes. Am I aware of the degree to which my self intrudes? No. How do I know that? Because nobody has perfect insight. Nobody sees themselves as they are. The only one who can is God. And I believe, perhaps, I don't believe, I speculate, that may be purgatory. You will actually see yourself as God sees you. And you will be even more surprised that he loves you, given all that. Perhaps. No, our Lord said something. He said, you will be held accountable for every idle word you speak. I'm in big trouble. I got a boatload of idle words in my life. And so, if those are exposed to me in what I hope will be my final purification, I ain't gonna like seeing it. I'm not gonna like it. I will be shocked at all the times I thought I was just so pure in my motives and just so altruistic and just so nice and just so understanding and empathic and just so kind and just so charitable. And 22% of my motive was me. 43% of my motive was me and what I wanted. So, I sure hope. I can almost say for certain I'm not a narcissist because if I go to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 5 and I look at the characteristics of what a narcissist is, as best I can understand it, I don't see that kind of extremeness in my personal and social interactions. However, that isn't really much of a consolation, is it? In other words, it's the old, well, I'm not as bad as that guy. Well, that's not what a Christian does. A Christian has to say, my standard is set by God, so I don't have a standard set by the bulk of other people. Well, you know, I don't cheat on my taxes. I don't run around on my wife. I don't gamble. I don't drink too much alcohol. I'm not a nasty person. I've never had any domestic violence. I'm a pretty good dude. That is not how a Christian measures him or herself. Notice my sensitivity in the pronouns, him or herself. Of course, you could just say measures themselves, but I just have a hard time with that because my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Elgis, she would never let me get away with that. When you have a singular nominative and then you use a predicate that's a pronoun plural, oh, she didn't worry about bloodying up my paper with red ink. My papers looked like they were in a knife fight. So I would hope that those characteristics of extreme self-centeredness, extreme, wouldn't be part of who I am. But again, I would hope. I can't know. And here's the irony. Here's the irony. That kind of self-centeredness comes and goes, doesn't it? It's not there all the time. Depends on the situation. (877) 57 equal. You can call to share if you're a woman. To jaw if you're a guy. To have meaningful conversation if you're female. To talk about the value of the DH in the American League if you're male. Yep. All righty. Sharon from, looks like, West Virginia, said, I think you're right, Dr. Ray, that narcissism is overused. Well, that's a very self-centered thing to say, Sharon. Okay. Wanted you to repeat the end of the addiction call, since there was a technical issue. Yeah, Andrew informed me of that. There was a technical issue. And I was cut off. About a minute of what I had to say was cut off. Everything we've done that has studied this program, a minute of me being cut off, it translates into about a 3-point IQ loss for you. Yeah, pretty much. So, I'm going to go back. Sharon, you there?
Yes, I am.
What was the last thing you heard me say?
All right. First, I'm just so glad to get to talk to you. And I just wanted you to know that we have 9 children and 1 in heaven, so I can relate to your situation in life. But
craziness?
I was really... What?
Craziness?
Yes, sometimes. Okay. I was really interested in what you had to say to the lady about her, I believe it was son, who was it an addiction problem with spending or gambling or something like that. And then you were saying, well, you've got to cut off the link between him doing it and what makes him excited about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to know that because I'm dealing with a situation similar to that. So if you can repeat that part, that would be awesome.
Our caller was caught up in the idea that, which is a very common idea, we've got to reach internally and change the person's motivation. We've got to get them to understand the self-destructive nature of what they're doing. And ideally, that's true. But you have to sever the habit first. It's very, very hard to change internal motivation, internal attraction, if the habit is still allowed to exist.
Right.
So one of the things that gambling approaches use is they make it harder and harder for the person to feed their habit. You know, you don't go to Vegas. You don't get on the internet. It's the same thing with pornography. You can't tell somebody, well, pornography is morally evil, so therefore you shouldn't do it, and you're jeopardizing your soul. Oh, okay, I just won't do it anymore. That doesn't work for 90% of people.
Right.
What you do is you have to somehow sever that link to let some kind of healing take place, some kind of distance from this attraction. So whomever it is that is doing this in your world has to be willing to say, okay, I will cooperate at some level in
right.
distancing myself from this. Now, if they're not going to do that, if they're going to say, well, you do this to me, I'll just find a way around it, they got problems.
Right.
They got significant problems.
Right.
And at some point, you know as well as I do that people destroy lives. They suck up their savings. They ruin their marriages. All for that rush. All for that kick in of those endorphins in the brain that are naturally occurring opiates that give you this incredible rush because you're in the midst of this risk that could pay off. And the body's
right.
wired that way. It truly is. So to break that, the first thing is, if you can get the person to agree, all right, set up my environment so this is much, much harder for me to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
That's big. That's kind of a sign of, I'm willing to work at this. If the person says, which sadly often happens, I don't have a problem. It's not that bad. I can control it. I can do it when I want. I'm not hurting anything.
Right.
This is cheap money. This is play money. I can do this. Now you got a problem because they don't have the motive.
Right.
And sadly, and if you're speaking from the perspective of a mother, sadly, to sit and watch a child, a young adult child, do this to himself, and by the way, it is mostly men, is just difficult. You're helpless. You're helpless.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, how do I reach? How do I reach? How do I reach? There's got to be a key. There's got to be a way. I always tell parents, when you've done everything you can think of doing, at some point, you do have to say, for better or for worse, this is their life, and I can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will devastate you. Otherwise, it will pull that part of those other eight kids' mother that they love to see, and she's being dragged down by one.
Right.
And it takes away from the other eight. I mean, I've had that in my own family. I mean, there's times when I've had
yeah.
to put massive amounts of effort in trying to guide and direct and control one child, and it took away from the others.
Right.
Significantly so. And I realized I can't do that.
Right.
So.
Well, I can relate to everything that you're saying. And with the child that I'm talking about, he also has a mental disability, so that compounds it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a while, any safeguards that I would put on the situation, he would say, you're just controlling me, and that would create a lot of anger and so forth. And that was a very frustrating time. At this point, thanks to a lot of prayer, I believe, he is agreeable to having safeguards put on him. And for a while, I was hoping that he could do it without safeguards. I was
that's tough.
Not knowledgeable
that's
about
tough,
it.
Dear. Yeah.
And I was just hoping that he could kick in with his will and his love for God to decide.
How old is he?
To do it. But he's 36.
Oh, gosh, he's way outside of your control.
But apparently, he can't without safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
He is not able to live on his own, so he lives with us.
Okay.
So
okay.
His older brother has put all the safeguards on everything mm-hmm. that we can. And he gets SSI money. So as soon as it comes into his account, I transfer it to a savings account for him so that he doesn't have immediate access to
it. There you go. Smart move. Because keeping in mind, however developmentally delayed he is, probably affects his judgment. So if he's functioning at a IQ of 72, which probably is because he got Social Security, he's probably declared developmentally delayed, right?
It's a schizoaffective disorder.
Okay. Yeah, so that comes and goes.
Right. So he has actually told me, because we've had very strong heart-to-heart conversations about it, and I said, just give me an understanding of how you're thinking about this. And he's actually told me it gives him a rush to be able to spend money like this.
Absolutely.
You know, he gets money and he gets a rush from it. So we're just safeguarding the money because he has long-term goals of wanting to buy things in the future that are going to enhance his independence, but he can't get there if he keeps spending it on the first thing that comes up in front of his face. So
good for you. You're taking charge the way you need to take charge, especially given that even though he's 36, he may have the judgment level of a 15-year-old or something similar, correct? Okay.
Right.
All righty, dear. Thank you for the call. Bless you. I got to run because I'm up against break. I got to cut you off, but you call back. We'll talk some more. This is Dr. Ray.
The church has a very high view of conscience. I think it was St. John Henry Newman who called conscience the aboriginal vicar of Christ. The Catechism reads this way on conscience: the interior voice of a human being within whose heart the inner law of God is inscribed. Moral conscience is a judgment of practical reason about the moral quality of a human action. It moves a person at the appropriate moment to do good and to avoid evil. It offers some suggestions, the Ten Commandments, the moral teachings of Jesus in the Gospels, the moral teachings of St. Paul. All of these things are used as a measure of how well we're doing. It is then up to the Catholic to take a look at the teaching of the Church and to see if, in fact, they are in proper communion. The idea that you can dispense with the objective moral teachings of the Church in favor of personalized conscience is lawless and anarchic.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
Did you know you have divine glory living within you? If you are a baptized Christian, you are host to a gentle guest, says the Catholic Catechism. This guest inspires, guides, corrects, and strengthens us to live our life in Christ. That gentle friend is the Spirit of Christ, the third person of the Blessed Trinity, the Holy Spirit. He is active in us, transforming us spiritually if we are willing, so that we may live as children of the light. There are two ways to live. The first way, the way of Christ, leads to life. The opposite way leads to death, an eternity without God. Choose life, then. Choose Christ, a life of challenge and joy. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Is that ambling music? Think about it. Don't you just picture yourself kind of ambling? Like one of those cartoon characters that just sort of move along like that. Dr. Ray, ambling toward the end of the program. This is so sad. And I don't know any way around it. Because it's been emotionally created. It has been whipped up. And it doesn't matter. Follow the science doesn't matter for a lot of people who say follow the science, because they don't. The science isn't set anyway. Jack from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, his wife and he are COVID recovered. So I'm assuming that they were diagnosed with COVID. And in fact, research is coming out that the antibodies, even though we don't really kind of know how long they're effective, there are certainly medical people of note saying that the recovery, the antibodies and the T cells in one's constitution are even more efficient in blocking a recurrence of the illness than the vaccine. However, their granddaughter is being baptized, and they are not invited because they have not pursued the vaccine. Hello, Jack.
Hey, Dr. Ray. We're invited to the church, but not to the party.
Is that right now? Is that right?
Yeah.
So, am I to assume that you're not even invited over to their house?
No, we haven't. This child was born 8 months ago. We've never even held the child, and we have two other little grandchildren. We've seen them before the vaccines. We've seen them with masks on and outside. But once the vaccines came, and the parents got vaccinated, and we didn't, that's it.
So the parents are afraid you're going to give something to the children?
Yes.
And, of course, the parents aren't following the science at all in this because children are virtually immune.
Well, our son, works for one of the companies that manufactured one of the vaccines. Mm-hmm. They're both scientists, so it's really very strange. Like, our dilemma is we certainly want to go to the sacrament and we want to see our child, grandchild baptized. But it's going to be very, very difficult for us.
Go and stand in the back quietly. You will make your statement. There will be those who will recognize this as they will interpret it as a terrible reaction on the part of your son and his wife. I would imagine that the majority of the people there will be, if you will, in your corner about this. The other thing I would imagine is that they probably, your son and his wife, have not gone around and taken a poll of everybody who's coming. Have you been vaccinated? Have you been vaccinated? Okay, you can sit then. I don't know if they've done that.
But the invitation said it. The invitation said if you're not vaccinated, you can't come to the party.
Well, how are they going to prove it? You know there's going to be people who are going to go, this is ridiculous, I'm going, and I'll tell them I had the vaccine. You know that.
Not only that, but if he has 20 people there, one of them probably has the virus. It's only 95% effective.
So, you know what I would say, my friend? I probably would ask your son, do you have any idea what has to be coming out scientifically as we continue to understand the vaccine and all of this? Do you have any idea when you will decide that we are allowed to be around the kids? And if he said...
I asked him that question.
And I know what he said. He said, when you get the vaccine. That's probably what he said.
That or the CDC and Dr. Fauci say it's okay.
I see. Well,
so it's just
they probably will come to say that. I think that's your hope, Jack. They will probably. I got to believe it. I can see the research trending in that direction. That they're probably going to come out and say at some point we've hit herd immunity at some point. And the interesting thing is somebody yesterday, I was at a hotel and she said, well, because of the pandemic. And I wanted to say there is no pandemic. It is over. The definition of a pandemic, we're not even close to it anymore.
Right.
But they're still using the term.
Getting back to your narcissistic situation, the what we were told was, do you know how hard this is for us not to invite you?
Okay.
What about them,
my friend?
How hard is it for you,
my friend? The sad thing of it is that you're forced to live with this, how they see it, and to the degree that it's a misperception or not, time will tell. Although the evidence seems to be definitely trending in that direction. As a result, you know, the other night I was at a fair. It was a huge local festival. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people were there. And they were within 3 inches of each other the whole time. I mean, you had to move through bodies everywhere. And I think that just indicates that people want to live normally again. And hopefully that momentum will occur. But for the meantime, my friend, you're probably going to have to keep a low profile and do what they say. God bless you.
We've told them that.
All right. This is Dr. Ray. I got to run. I thank all the people at KVSS. Bless you for letting me be here. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Eric. Walk with God. Don't stay 6 feet away from God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.